are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for the Step Back and Fanrag Sports, and I write for the Miami Heat's Tip Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg. I am solo for today's show. We're going to be taking your Twitter questions. I'll get to my spotlight player of the game later on, but this was the worst loss of the season for the Heat, no? The Miami Heat losing to the Sacramento Kings, 89-88. The Kings being the worst team in the NBA, last in offensive rating, last in defensive rating, entered that game tied with the worst record in the league. The Heat lose to them at home after a long break. It's just inexcusable for a team that's trying to get the third seed in the East, and the Heat have had some bad losses this season, but none as bad as this Kings game. Not even close. And yeah, you know, they returned from a long road trip, and Tony Fiorentino has talked about this, and even, you know, David and I have talked about this in the past, where sometimes the hardest game is the game back after a long road trip, the game back home after a long road trip. And that's, you know, because players, they're not on that adrenaline high of kind of traveling 24/7 and being on the road. They get home, they've got family things that they need to attend to. Maybe they're a little tired. Maybe they're a little lazy by the time they get back. Maybe they take it for granted being home. They don't have that same edge that they come out with. But even with all of that, this is an inexcusable loss, again, for a team that is one of the top four teams in the Eastern Conference right now. You can't lose those games. Miami, it was a tight game for the first three quarters. Miami got out to a lead, a 12-point lead in the fourth quarter. It looked like, okay, you know, that maybe they just had to sort of get over those, you know, jitters or nerves or just sort of the doldrums of being back home. And they started to open up a lead in the fourth quarter. They had a 12-point lead with a little bit more than 6 minutes to go. And then they just went. They went on a scoring drought. They couldn't score again for the next 4.5 minutes. They did not score a point. From 6.5 minutes in the game to about the 2 minute mark, they didn't score at all. And I don't care who you're playing in the NBA, you can't go 4.5 minutes without scoring at all and expect to win a game. I don't care who it is. I don't care if it's the Kings. I don't care if it's the Warriors. You can't do that. Miami struggled to get any offense outside of Goran Dragic and Wayne Ellington. The two of them, they combined for half of Miami's points. The two of them combined for 43 points. Miami scored 88 points in that game. They couldn't get anything outside of those two guys. If you're looking for a silver lining, Goran Dragic looked good in his first game back from injury. I mean, that was fun. But other than that, no such silver lining can be found. I mean, look, the Heat got outscored in the paint 42-32. That's usually a place they have the edge. That's usually a place that the Sacramento Kings don't have an edge. And I've seen the Kings up close and in person several times this season, and I've seen them in person blow games in the last few minutes because they can't execute. Miami in these last few minutes, they couldn't execute. It was the Kings that did. Let's go to that last key possession of the game there, where Sacramento had the ball, down one, shot clock off, just a few more seconds left in the game, and Miami forces a tough jump shot. The Kings miss, and they fail to box out. De'Aaron Fox comes running out of nowhere, jumps basically over Goran Dragic, and has the game-winning dunk, the putback dunk. Amazing play by De'Aaron Fox. Incredible play by De'Aaron Fox. Goran Dragic took the blame at the end of the game, saying he didn't box out. I thought he boxed out well enough. He boxed out a little, rose up. I just don't know what you're going to do if you're Goran Dragic against somebody like De'Aaron Fox with that sort of athleticism, that sort of bounce. The guys that really are to blame there, Bam Adebayo and James Johnson, just sort of standing around there. Though Bam Adebayo, the rookie, is the guy who needs to elevate and get up and go grab that board and go attack that rebound with some aggression. And he didn't. He was very passive. The Heat don't get a good shot on the inbound pass. They've got about a little bit more than three seconds left on the clock when they get the ball back. They try an out of timeout after timeout play. It looked like it was sort of designed for Wayne Ellington, and then maybe the secondary option was Josh Richardson. The Kings credit their defense, lock down Ellington. They get the ball to Josh Richardson. Richardson has an off-balance, long mid-range shot that misses, and that's the end of the game. The Heat lose. And what really stuck out to me in this game was that Zach Lowe, a few weeks ago in his piece about the Miami Heat for ESPN, wrote something in that piece that has really stuck with me about Miami's offense, and that is, if that first shot on offense doesn't go in, the Heat are pretty much SOL. And that's been the case all season. Look, the Heat are 26th in the NBA in offensive rebounding rate. They're not a good offensive rebounding team, despite playing two bigs most of the time, despite having Hassan Whiteside, one of the better rebounders in the game at center. But Whiteside is a great defensive rebounder, not a great offensive rebounder. Olynyk and James Johnson are fine rebounders, but not elite, and especially not on the offensive end. So Miami is one of the worst offensive rebounding teams in the NBA. They don't have a guy who could really create his own shot, and so they really rely on ball movement and hot shooting to win games. And that's the sort of team the Heat are. They live by the three, die by the three, basically. And so when that's the case, you're going to have losses like this when you're not shooting well. And the Heat didn't shoot well. They shot 37.8% from the field, 35.3%. from 3-point range, just 12 of 34. And look, on a night where you miss 51 of 82 shots, the Heat only got 7 offensive rebounds. 51 of 82 shots they missed, and you only get 7 offensive rebounds. Now, you never want to miss a whole bunch of shots, but usually when you miss all of those shots, what kind of comes of that is offensive rebounds. It's a numbers game. The more shots you miss on offense, the more opportunities you have for offensive rebounds. 7 offensive rebounds in 51 misses is bad. That's just bad. And so if Miami is going to live by the jump shot like they have to, then they need to find a way to get better offensive rebounding from their team. And it's surprising, again, because you have somebody like Whiteside who is so big like Whiteside. Because you're playing with two bigs for most of the time, because you have guards who like to attack the boards like Tyler Johnson and Goran Dragic, Josh Richardson to a certain extent, it's surprising that they're not as good on the offensive glass as maybe they should be. We're going to get to the Twitter questions next, and I'll get to my spotlight player later on. But if you run a company and you're unhappy with your ROI with traditional advertising online or in print, try something new in 2018 and advertise with us here on Locked On Heat. National brands like SeatGeek, Draft, and MyBookie are already advertising on the show, but it's also a great opportunity for local South Florida businesses to connect with Heat fans. Podcast listeners are 65% more likely to engage with advertisers than from traditional media, and the number of people listening to podcasts is growing every year, as opposed to the people reading newspapers or listening to radio. Be ahead of the curve and start advertising on a podcast with us. You have nothing to lose by reaching out, and our rates are reasonable. They're based on the number of listens, so it's an efficient use of your time and your money. For more information on rates and next steps, email us at lockedonheat@gmail.com, and we could be talking about your company right here on the show. My spotlight player is coming up later on, but let's get into some of these Twitter questions and comments here. Jeff asks, do we miss Deion yet? Yikes. #AskLOHeat. Thank you for sending that in, Jeff. It's a really interesting point. It's something that I thought about while watching that game. Again, when your entire offense, basically 50% of your offense, is coming from two guys, Ellington and Dragic, nobody else can really, like, other guys had moments. Whiteside was basically garbage for the first three quarters, had a strong fourth quarter. Winslow, he had his moments. Josh Richardson made a couple of shots, had some defensive moments there. But when your entire offense is basically just two guys, That's sort of what Deion Waiters provided. Every once in a while, he would just go off and just win you a game by himself. And when you're missing Deion Waiters and Tyler Johnson isn't back yet, and it sounds like Tyler Johnson's getting closer to coming back, but he wasn't back for this game, then yeah, you miss Deion Waiters in a game like this. That is, for all of the struggles that Deion Waiters has had this season, that is what Deion Waiters is good for, is just kind of coming in and creating his own shot, creating shots for other in the drive and kick situation, and just making things happen. And right, and this game, Miami's offense couldn't make anything happen. The ball movement, they weren't only missing shots. The ball movement was bad. The shot, it wasn't a high quality shot game for the Heat. They weren't getting good looks, you know, and there was a few guys, Winslow in particular, who were missing point blank shots at the rim. And, you know, if he makes a few more of those, then the Heat probably win this game. But they probably only win this game by scoring 90 or 92 points. You know, it still would have been a bad offensive game for them. So this is the sort of game where you miss Deion Waiters and Tyler Johnson. I'll put, you know, those, both of those guys, you're missing both of them here. And, you know, when you're a team that is without an all-star, without a superstar player, you need that depth, because not, you know, the difference between a role player or a high level role player like the Heat have so many of, and a superstar or an all-star player, is that those superstar and all-star players perform more consistently. So the Heat have high-level role players, but they don't perform as consistently as all-stars or superstars. That's why you need more of them, and the Heat need more of them. Derrick Jones Jr. was a negative tonight, you know? As impressive as he has been off of his two-way contract, starting again tonight for the Heat, he didn't do anything for them tonight. The Heat would have been much better off with Tyler Johnson or Deion Waiters in the starting two-guard spot. They probably win this game if they have either of them in the lineup tonight, and they didn't. At Jaw1300 tweets, Whiteside and JJ cost us the game. Unreal how Spo get them in the game and takes out the guys that got us the lead. And I think what we're referring to here is that with about between 6 and 7 minutes left, the Heat's bench in the beginning of the fourth quarter was the one that got them out to that 12-point lead. And then Spoelstra went back to a bunch of his starters. And look, it's easy to criticize Spoelstra for sort of playing his guys, Whiteside and James Johnson, when other guys were playing so well. Olynyk was playing pretty well for them, helping kind of generate some offense. But again, on a night when just nobody other than Dragic and Ellington, who were both in there at the end of the game, have anything going on, it's hard to determine who you should be playing with. So when nobody's got it going, you might as well just ride your starters out at the end. I understand Spoelstra's logic there. I get it. And Whiteside, for his credit, had a really good fourth quarter. He was one of the guys that helped get Miami to open up that 12-point lead there. So look, you can go back and sort of question Spoelstra's decisions. Should he have put the starters back in? Should James Johnson have been in there over Justice Winslow, who was doing a lot of things defensively and as far as ball handling, was playing well for them, Bam Adebayo? Should he have been in there at the end, you know, over maybe going small with Kelly Olynyk and James Johnson in there? There's some things that Spoelstra might want to take back, but again, it's just when nobody's playing well, when nobody outside of two guys is generating any offense, and really defensively, you know, the team is playing fine, but nobody is really having a standout game. You know, I credit more Sacramento not being a good team than Miami's defense for Sacramento only scoring 89 points, then it's hard to determine who your best five of that game is. And when Spoelstra throughout the entire season is basically to close games has gone with the hot hands, when you've only got two hot hands and everybody else is just ice cold, it's really hard to determine who you should be playing at the end of that game. I don't envy Spoelstra for being in that situation. Chris writes in, I would just like to point out that Justice Winslow is leading the team in plus minus. So Justice Winslow was a plus 19 in that game. In 27 minutes, he was 3 of 7 from the field, had 11 points, he had 5 rebounds, 2 assists, was tremendous defensively, I thought, was really active. Got a lot of crap on Twitter for missing a bunch of kind of gimme layups right at the rim, and you know, it does feel like and seem like that he's regressed as a finisher as his three-point shooting has improved. It's a shame, because if he could kind of combine those two things, he'd be a much better offensive player, obviously. But Winslow played really well, I thought. He came in behind Goran Dragic as the backup point guard. Spoelstra likes to stagger Josh Richardson and Goran Dragic's minutes for most of the games between the start and the end of the game when they're usually both on the floor together. He likes to stagger those minutes just to make sure that he has a shot creator on the floor at all times, between Dragic and Richardson, guys who can kind of get their own shots. And when Dragic was out, Winslow was the guy coming in and kind of playing that backup point guard role, allowing Josh Richardson and then also Wayne Ellington to sort of play off the ball. Winslow was awesome as that backup point guard. He made a number of really great passes, a couple of nice pocket passes in that game. And I continue to say on this show, Justice Winslow is a point guard. He is Miami's backup point guard. I mean, he could be to the Heat what Marcus Smart basically is for the Boston Celtics. You know, a guy who can run a decent pick and roll, play really good defense, switch defensively on 1-4 and 1-5 pick and rolls. You know, Winslow playing point guard, not only offensively does he have a knack for it, but defensively, if you know, the opponent is playing just your normal pick and roll game, Winslow has the size and the defensive intensity and intangibles and just skill level to switch on to bigs in pick and rolls, which is something most point guards just can't do. And Winslow can do that. I think that's his future, is playing that role where he's clearly, you know, not talented or skilled enough offensively to maybe play a wing ball handling spot and be relied on to score off the ball a little bit. And he's shown promise as a stretch four, but he's just not as good as guys consistently like James Johnson or Kelly Olynyk or guys like that. And he's not a threat enough, even though his 3-point shooting has improved this season, not a threat enough at a high volume to really stretch the floor from that four position. Backup point guard, put the ball in his hands. You've got to at least respect the guy when the guy has the guy with the ball in his hands. You can't just play off of him, you know, which so many defenses right now do when Winslow's just sort of standing in the corner. Put him on the ball, let him initiate the offense, which he obviously can do. He has a skill set for and appreciates. He likes that. Before the season started, Winslow told me on the show he likes playing with the ball in his hands. He likes playing point guard basically because it allows him to give the ball energy and allows the ball to give him energy, and he feels more engaged and he feels like he can kind of get going more offensively. All right, so we got the spotlight player coming up next. But first, quick reminder to make sure that you are subscribed to Locked On Heat on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to check us out on Spotify. That's right, we are now on Spotify. So you can listen to Locked On Heat on your app on the go. And don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes. It helps other Heat fans discover the show. Heat fans like Jordan Burr, who says, if you love the Heat, you'll love the podcast. Keeps me updated on all my Miami Heat news. Also, be sure to check out the rest of what the Locked On Podcast Network has to offer, including shows for every NBA and NFL team. The Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. All right, so usually David and I do the spotlight players together. He picks one and I pick one, but since I'm writing solo today and David couldn't make the show, I will do just the one. And my spotlight player tonight is Josh Richardson. And I could have went with Goran Dragic because he had a strong game. He looked quick, nice first step coming off of screens, and was impressive in his first game back. So again, if you're looking for a silver lining, Goran Dragic looks healthy and he looks well. Wayne Ellington, obviously, big game for him, scoring 20 points, 6 of 13 from three-point range. Good game for him. But I'm talking about Josh Richardson because he continues to struggle. And this is from Tom DeAngelo's recap from the Palm Beach Post of the game. Josh Richardson was the Heat's best player for 5 weeks, averaging 17.5 points on 54% shooting during an 18-game stretch starting December 1st. But after going 2 of 13 and scoring 6 points against the Kings, Richardson is now 28 of 83 in his last 6 games. That's shooting. And during that span, he has scored more than 14 points just one time, something he did 11 times between December 1st and January 7th. So Josh Richardson is clearly now in a slump. And that's a shame because we were talking a lot about how Josh Richardson has really elevated into Miami's best player, and now it seems like maybe it was a small sample size and a reaction to a small sample size. And I still think Josh Richardson has the potential to be Miami's best player, and I think he's still Miami's best two-way player. I still believe that, and that right now he's just going through a slump, and slumps happen. But Goran Dragic has not gone through a whole lot of slumps. Now, he did have that 1 week and a half, 2 weeks where right after he won his first player of the week for the Eastern Conference, he wasn't playing well. He wasn't shooting well from the field. But there, it does seem to be fewer and further between Dragic's slumps compared to Richardson. Richardson started the season basically in a slump after a really strong preseason. He started the first few weeks of the season not playing well at all, had that really strong December to mid-January, and has since not played well again. So he's struggling shooting. I don't know if he's hurt. It doesn't seem like it. I just, maybe defenses are keying in on him a little bit more. I noticed tonight he settled for a lot of long twos. He's shooting off the dribble a little bit more. He might be trying to force it a little bit, and that's sort of what strikes me here. And I noticed it also in that Houston Rockets loss, which was an impressive game for the Heat to even be in that game against the Rockets, despite it being a loss. But in that game, and I tweeted this during the game, Josh Richardson did not seem hesitant at all to turn that game into a shootout between him and Chris Paul and James Harden, which is probably not the right strategy, I would imagine. But he didn't seem afraid of doing that. He is obviously, since that stretch there, grown in confidence and is in his own shot and in his own ability to sort of create his own shot. And Spoelstra has had confidence in him, putting him in at the end of games, letting him run the offense when Dragic isn't in there a lot of times, giving him the ball in key situations at the end of games, in clutch situations. So you can't blame him for it, but it does seem like right now he's forcing things a little bit. Again, for shooting off the dribble, not letting the ball come to him, fewer catch-and-shoot opportunities, more mid-range shots than usual. So he's forcing it a little bit. I think the Heat and Josh Richardson, they need to sort of dial it back on him a little bit more, try to get him easy looks off catch-and-shoots, off of screens, maybe run some of those sets that Spoelstra likes to run for Wayne Ellington and just get him moving a little bit more. I know earlier in the year, they used to run these pin down screens between Josh Richardson and a big, where the big would get the ball and then kind of pass it either to Josh Richardson, or the big would do a dribble handoff to another guard and Richardson would curl off of the big screen for an easy layup or a dunk, getting more of those actions involved and calling more sets for Richardson as opposed to letting him ISO and sort of freelance could get him back into that rhythm that the Heat need him to be in. Because again, you can't have half of your offense generated by two players. It's just impractical. And if the Heat are going to eventually grab that third seed that has been so elusive, you know, entering this game a half game behind Cleveland, where they would have had an opportunity to tie for the third seed if they had won against Sacramento, you've got to get Josh Richardson back in rhythm if you're going to eventually grab that third seed. So Miami has dropped two clutch situations after being 20-9 entering that Houston Rockets game, 20-9 in clutch situations in the season. They've dropped now two clutch situations in a row. I think that's going to be, if you're Spoelstra, an area of opportunity, something that he's going to drill with his team, is executing in those final minutes again, not executing on that last Sacramento Kings possession where De'Aaron Fox had the putback dunk, and not executing well on that ATO to end the game and ended up with a bad shot, and the Heat now dropping that game to Sacramento. We'll be back next week. That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening and for subscribing. You could send mailbag questions and ask about advertising on the show by sending an email to lockdownheat@gmail.com. Tweet your questions or comments for our recaps using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time.